So what was the conclusion of the last chapter?
I like to recall the point of intimacy. The Lord enjoys intimacy, relationship, birth is grandeur and majesty. And so that the pastime of Arjuna and Krishna traveling across the Loka mountain to rescue the sons of the Brahmana, not so much establishes Krishna supreme, higher than Mahavishnu, but actually it makes another point also, how Sri Krishna is very much inclined to protect his devotees.
He's such a personalist. He's the supreme personalist of Godhead. And you really see this in Krishna's Leela. And even this is in Krishna's Dwarka Leela, but it comes out even more in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, how personal he is and how much inclined to his devotee is. And when people think about God, the Supreme, they think of him very much as with so much awe and reverence. So that is appropriate. Where's that one? Let's see if it's right here. I think it's yes. When the messenger came in to the assembly hall where Krishna was in Dwarka. It's not here. So when Krishna was sitting on the in the assembly hall of the Yadus, this is what it was like. He would enter the Sudama assembly hall, which protected those who enter it from the six waves of material life, dear King. As the Almighty Lord would seat himself on his exalted throne in the assembly hall, he shone with his unique effulgence. So this is God. And this is heaven, where none of the miseries of material existence exists there. All those who enter are protected from the six waves of material life. And then there's the Almighty Supreme Lord seated upon his exalted throne in the assembly hall. And he's shining with a unique effulgence. And he's so effulgent, perhaps you can't even see the features on his face. His effulgence was illuminating all the quarters, all the parts of space, everything around. And he shone amidst the Yadus like the moon amidst the stars. So this is God as king. But usually when religious systems relate to God as king, they stop with that sort of photograph of him sitting there on the throne. And the dear ones, the ones who are dear to him, like in the Bible, it says that Jesus sits on the, what side? The left side. He sits on one side, left side or the right side, left hand of the Lord, like that. So there he is with his intimate associates. So it's like a snapshot, a photograph. But what happens next? What does he do? Even in the assembly hall, even when he's sitting on his throne, what is he doing? Is his consciousness only on the people in the material world who are suffering and making sure that no one gets away with anything, that the bad people get punished and the good people get rewarded? Is that all? His whole consciousness is on that. So then the next verse in the Bhagavad Gita, because it's relating to him as a king, practically speaking, because that's the concept. He's the king, king of kings, Eka Indra. So then the next thing is, if he's a king, it's not only a snapshot, but not only does he rule his kingdom, but there's other things that he does as well. So, and then he's entertained in Dwarka by the jesters and the dancers and the musicians, and people come in and recite his glories and So this is what's happening if you're understanding him as a king. And they would chant prayers and sing his glories. But Krishna, of course, he is the king, but he's more than the king. Just as the king is the king, naturally, but he's more than the king too, he's a person. And he has his personal likes and his personal dislikes. But when he's sitting on the throne in the assembly hall, he doesn't display his personality so much. He displays his royal disposition. He acts as a king should act. But then when he gets home, he plays, he does this and he does that. And he plays with his dearest people. He closes the door of his private quarters so no one who is not in his most intimate circle can enter, and then he can just relax. He can take his crown and hang it on the hook where he puts his crown. But it's interesting, when the king enters and leaves the assembly hall, there's always the blowing of trumpets. And he walks out very formally, and someone holds his cloak, and there are guards walking out with him. But then the guards stay at the door of his personal quarters in the palace, and he walks in, and then the door shuts, and then he can act as he likes. The rest in the assembly, it's duty, but once he's in there, in his private quarters, he can relax and he can act with his beloveds as he likes. So Krishna, as we heard, is the supreme amongst Lord Vishnu. And now we enter chapter 90, which is the final chapter in the 10th canto, which is titled The Summary of Lord Krishna's Glories. But really, even though the chapter has more than 40 verses, 49, even it has 50 verses to be exact. There are two verses that specifically summarize, one verse that summarizes Krishna's glories and one verse that summarizes his pastimes. And the verse that summarizes his pastimes is one of the verses that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited at Rath Yatra, amongst other verses as well. And then at the end there's a benediction. So this chapter is practically speaking, it speaks about, in the beginning it's going to describe Krishna's playful dealings when he's not sitting on the throne in Dwarka, but he's playfully dealing with his Mahishis, the queens, in quite a wonderful way. And in addition to it being a wonderful way, it's extremely intimate. So it's like getting a glimpse. What we're doing here in this beginning of this chapter is the doors of the private quarters of the king open, and we who are not really qualified to see how he enjoys with his beloveds in a very intimate way, we are allowed a glimpse. But there's, before we read it, I'd like to just remind us of one which is somewhat similar to what's going to be described here. But earlier, in the beginning of the chapter 75, does anyone remember what chapter 75 is? The 10th canto? 74 is the registry of sacrifice and Sisupal killed, and then why in 75, why Duryodhana felt insulted at the end of the Rajasuya's sacrifice, because Duryodhana was humiliated. But before that occurs, there's a description of the end of the Rajasuya sacrifice, and it describes the end, the playfulness that took place. Men and women, all adorned with sandalwood paste, flower garlands, jewelry, and fine clothing. So everyone was adorned, dressed, decorated very wonderfully. They sported by smearing and sprinkling one another with various liquids. The men smeared the courtesans with plentiful oil, yogurt, perfume, water, turmeric, and kumkum powder. And the courtesans playfully smeared the men with the same substances. So very intimate playing. Surrounded by guards, King Yudhisthira's queens came out on their chariots to see the fun, just as the demigods' wives appeared in the sky in celestial aeroplanes. As maternal cousins and intimate friends sprinkled the queens with liquids, so this is the intimate dealings, and this is what we're going to see in the 90th chapter as well, the intimate dealings between Krishna's queen and his queens. The last time that the very intimate dealings between Krishna's queens were discussed was in the 11th chapter of the first canto, where Krishna enters Dwarka after a long time of separation. And there, Srila Prabhupada in his purport explains that there's not the slightest trace of lust in any of the dealings. But here, we're getting an intimate look. We who are not extremely qualified are getting an intimate look of what goes on after the Rajasuya sacrifice. Maternal cousins and intimate friends sprinkled the queens with liquids. The ladies' faces bloomed with shy smiles. This is Yudhisthira's queens, enhancing the queen's splendid beauty. As the queens squirted water from their syringes at their brother-in-laws and other male companions, their own garments became drenched, revealing their arms, breasts, thighs, and waists. In their excitement, the flowers fell from their loosened braids. By these charming pastimes, they agitated those with contaminated consciousness. So those of us who are peeking inside from the outside, who aren't pure enough to enter truly, but just get a glimpse, we somehow or another, by fortune, we're getting a glimpse of what happens. If we have contaminated consciousness, then the mind becomes agitated with inappropriate desires and inappropriate thoughts when hearing these things. But yet they are presented, so we read them. So this is what happens between Krishna's dealings with his queens, and this is the first section before leading to what's called the Mahishi Gita, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur refers it to it. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very fond of the prayers of the queens, because there's, well, we'll speak about that, the ecstatic emotions, very deep, loving prema bhakti that's spoken of. But here is the opening of the chapter. Description of Dwarka. Sukadeva Goswami said, "The master of the goddess of fortune resided happily in his capital city of Dwarka." So who is the master of the goddess of fortune? Krishna, yes. "Which was endowed with all opulences and populated by the most eminent rishis and their gorgeously dressed wives. When these beautiful women in the bloom of youth would play on the city's rooftops with balls and other toys, they shone like lightning flashes." They were refulgent, like flashing lightning. "The main streets of the city were always crowded with intoxicated elephants, exuding madha, and also with cavalry, richly adorned infantrymen, and soldiers riding chariots brilliantly decorated with gold." So very different from Vrindavan. "Gracing the city were many gardens and parks with rows of flowering trees where bees and birds would gather, filling all directions with their songs." So that is the setting. Dwarka is the setting on which the pastimes of Krishna, Vasudev Krishna and Dwarka take place. And on that setting, on that stage, which is wonderful and opulent, Krishna enters to exchange love with his beloved queens. So Krishna was the only beloved of his 16,000 wives. expanding himself into that many forms, he enjoyed with each of his queens in her own richly furnished residence. So we've also already heard these points in earlier in chapter 69 and 70, where Narada Muni enters and Krishna's daily activities are described. On the grounds of these palaces were clear ponds, fragrant with the pollen of blossoming lotuses, Utpala, Kalara, Kamuda, and Ambuja lotuses, and filled with flocks of cooing birds. The Almighty Lord, so he is still almighty, that means possessing all power, regardless of how he's acting. He's doing this, he's acting from the position of almightiness and omniscience, all-knowingness and all-opulence. And yet this is how he's choosing to act. So he would enter these ponds and also various rivers and enjoy sporting in the waters while his wives embraced him, leaving the red kumkum from their breasts smeared on his body. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments in this regard. According to the maxim, madhurena samapayet, all things should end sweetly. Sukadev Goswami has described Sri Krishna's water sports in the attractive setting of Dwarka, followed by the rapturous prayers of the Dwarka Mahishis, which are known as the Mahishi Gita. In the first verse, Sukadev describes the attractiveness of Dwarka to serve as an udipan, a stimulator for loving sentiments. He elaborately describes how Krishna enjoyed in all those palaces, sported in the royal ponds full of pure fragrant water, and then played in the clear rivers. While enjoying in the water, Krishna embraced his consorts. So everything ultimately in existence is in existence for the pleasure of Krishna. And of course, this is where the difficulty comes in. When we hear the pastimes of Krishna, we tend to place ourselves in the position of enjoyer, while in fact we are not enjoyers, but rather we are predominated enjoyers, or we enjoy by being enjoyed by Krishna, by offering ourselves, by offering service to Krishna. So everything in the spiritual world, and indeed everything in the material world, is meant for the service of Krishna. It's meant for the service of God. And it is the exploitative tendency of the mind and consciousness born of the false ego which causes us to make our attempt to exploit the material world, and thus we become entangled in the complexities of the material world due to our attempt to enjoy it. Bhunkte prakriti janaya karanam guna sangasya, and the result is sadasad joni janmasu. Because of our tendency to enjoy, we become entangled in all the karma of this world. Actions, reactions, based on false ego. So none of this goes on in the spiritual world. And here we're getting our glimpse. But the spiritual world, and indeed the material world, is all meant for Krishna's pleasure. In the spiritual world, everyone has agreed on this principle. Everything for Krishna. Whether it's Mathura, Dwarka, or Vrindavan, it's everything for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. Text 9. As Gandharvas joyfully sang his praises to the accompaniment of Madanga, Panava, and Anaka drums, and as professional reciters known as Sutas, Magadhas, and Vandis played Veenas and recited poems praising him, Lord Krishna would play with his wives in the water. So everyone is praising Krishna. He's treated in Dwarka, and when we worship the deities, as king and queens. This is the basic mood. We're dealing with the king, Ekendra, the King of all kings, the supreme ruler of all in existence. But yet this type of dealing is, it's for Krishna's pleasure and it's with his queens, but this is more intimate than most of the citizens in the kingdom get to see. Lord Krishna would play with his wives in the water, laughing. The queens would squirt water on him with syringes. What, there's a name for those syringes. I can't remember what they're called. Rechak. Yeah, and what do you call it?
Pichkari.
Pichkari, yeah. And he would squirt them back. So playing, it's all rasa. Thus Krishna would sport with his queens in the same way that the Lord of the Yakshas sported with the Yaksha nymphs. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the metaphor there. They're the Yakshis because they were very ferocious in their squirting Krishna. Under the drenched clothing of the queens, their thighs and breasts would become visible. The flowers tied in their large braids would scatter as they sprayed water on their consort. And on the plea of trying to take away his syringe, they would embrace him. And by his touch, their lusty feelings would increase, causing their faces to beam with smiles. Thus Lord Krishna's queen shone with resplendent beauty. So again, this has nothing to do with the material world. The conceptions of the material world are reflections of the concepts of the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, the lust is love, and in the material world, the love is lust. Everything is just opposite. Because ultimately in the spiritual world, everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure, and ultimately in the material world, everything is meant for the soul who has a false ego's pleasure. So Lord Krishna's flower garland would become smeared with kumkum from their breasts, and his abundant locks of hair would become disheveled as a result of his absorption in the game. As the Lord repeatedly sprayed his young consorts, they sprayed him in return. He enjoyed himself like the king of elephants, enjoying in the company of his bevy of she-elephants. Afterwards, Lord Krishna and his wives would give the ornaments and clothing they had worn during the water sports to the male and female performers who would be singing and playing instruments. Everything set up, the rivers, the clear water lakes, set up everything for Krishna's pleasure. Everything for Krishna's pleasure. Everything for Krishna's pleasure. Not my pleasure. Very hard to accept this point. That is not meant for me. It's not about me at all. It's all about Krishna and his pleasure. And this is the qualification, the main qualification for entering the spiritual world is an agreement to this principle, but not on only a superficial agreement, but to the depths of the heart, of the consciousness, agreeing everything for Krishna's pleasure. I am for Krishna's pleasure. I am his. And as we heard yesterday, the result of the giving of the soul to Krishna in that way, which is his natural constitutional position, is that Krishna actually becomes purchased. He becomes for those who are for him. Yayatam mam prapadyante. As Prabhupada said, I mentioned this previously in one lecture, that previously people would, they would make lakhs and lakhs and crores of money, and then near the end of the life, the man would come to Vrindavan to live in a very simple way. He would give all his money to his family. And he'd say, you should just send me 250 rupees a month for seva. Of course, at this point, for 250 rupees a month, it would be very difficult to survive. But in those days, you could survive and flourish and live quite comfortably on that. So, and also perform some seva, perhaps. So Prabhupada, he said sarcastically that all the money for my family, and you give 250 rupees to Krishna, so you give 200, you're for Krishna 250 rupees, and then he becomes for you 250 rupees. He reciprocates with you in an equal measure, percentage-wise. And if we give everything to Krishna, he gives himself completely to his devotee, even though our giving is insignificant. So here, we're going to hear about the queens more and their loving relationship with Krishna in a famous series of prayers. And here's the introductory verses to this. In this way, as we have heard, Krishna would sport with his queens, totally captivating their hearts with his gestures, his talks, his glances, his smiles, and also with his jokes, his playful exchanges, and his embraces. So Krishna, because they wanted to love Krishna in this way, Krishna loved them in a similar way to excite and bring up their ecstatic love. The queens would become stunned, this is 14, in ecstatic trance. This is not of the material world again. The result is ecstasy. They would become stunned. What does stunned mean? They couldn't move. Their consciousness would be so ecstatic they couldn't move. Their minds absorbed in Krishna alone. Then thinking of their lotus-eyed Lord, they would speak as if insane. Please hear these words from me, Sukadeva says, as I relate them in their ecstasies. Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that this superficial appearance of insanity in the Lord's queens, as if they had become intoxicated by datura or some other hallucinogenic drug, was in fact the manifestation of the sixth progressive stage of pure love of God, technically known as prema vaichitya. Srila Rupa Goswami refers to this variety of anurag in his Ujjana Nalamani. Priyasa sanat sani karshepi premod karshas swabhavataha ya vishlesha diartis tat premavachetilam uchete. When, as a natural byproduct of one's extreme love, one feels the distress of separation, even in the direct presence of the beloved, this state is called premavachetya. So, there are different stages of prema bhakti. Above prema bhakti, or a higher stage in the category of prema bhakti, is sneha, then man, and then after that, pranaya. There's a pranaya gita where the queens have lost all their sense of shyness. Excuse me, the gopis, the braja gopikas, when Krishna calls them for the rasa dance and then he says, go home. He's pulling out from their hearts their inner feelings. It's going to come out of their mouth, so they've lost their sense of shyness and they speak, how could you tell us to go home? We've come here for you. And they express what's in the depths of their heart. Because usually, what's in the depths of one's heart and one's affection, one doesn't speak it. One doesn't let it come out one's mouth. Things that are very secret are kept inside. And especially in this relationship, spiritual boy to spiritual girl. Very, very secret emotions they kept inside. But when the love increases to such an intensity that it can't remain inside, it comes out after man, which means after they're a bit angry at Krishna for how he's treating them, then it all comes out, their thoughts. And that is pranaya. And then pranaya increases further to raga, and then raga increases further to anuraga. And in this anuraga, one of the symptoms of anuraga, where everything, the ecstasy is so deep and so continuous, it's described that Krishna is always before your eyes. And he's always ever fresh, every moment. It's not like, oh, I've seen him before and I've seen this before. Every moment, it feels like this is the first time you've seen him. So in this anurag, in this prema vaichitya, the specific emotion is, even though you're seeing Krishna directly in front of you, the ecstasy, the love is so intense that you're feeling separate from him, even when he's right in front of you. This is the specific aspect of love of prema bhakti called prema vaichitya. This is also manifested in Vrindavan at times. And the famous lake near Barshana of Prem Sarova is manifested in this Prem Vaichitya mood of Srimati Radharani's Prem Vaichitya when she's sitting right on the lap of Krishna, and there's some bumblebee, Madhu, is bothering her, and Madhu Mangalbhata says, Madhusudan, that Madhu has gone, the bee has gone, and she hears it in her mind as Krishna has gone, even though she's sitting right on top of him, and she experiences this prema vaichitra of separation in the presence of. And it's also said, from that ecstasy of Srimati Radharani's ecstasy, thinking that Krishna has gone and falling into this prema vaichitra ecstasy, it is said at that point Krishna understood that when I'm here, there's one kind of ecstasy, and when I'm gone, there's another kind of ecstasy. And he decided to leave at that time, it is said, leave Vrindavan, and so that the gopis could experience the ecstasy. The when I'm with her, the gopis, Srimati Radharani, then she feels I'm away. And when I'm away, in her ecstasy of Mahabhav, even still higher, she's going to feel, she's going to access the aprakata lila, the unmanifest lila, and experience no separation from me. So I'm going to give her my presence by being away from her, instead of giving her my separation by being with her. So it is said that at that time, Krishna decided to go. It is said, that's loka praman. But Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that prema vaichitya is mostly manifested in the Mahishis, in the queens. There are verses 15 through 24. These 10 verses are this Mahishi Gita, where the queens are with Krishna. And whatever they're seeing is reminding them that Krishna is not there, or he's going to be separate. So they're feeling separation without the presence of Krishna. So it's interesting. They're looking around, and the first thing they see is a kurari bird, or rather they hear the kurari bird. And then after the kurari bird, now the kurari bird is translated as an osprey. Now, if you're not an ethnologist and don't know what an osprey is, I've done my research on that, and it is a water hawk, which makes sense because this is in Dwarka, and it has a particular cry. And then after so the queens are hearing the crying, or the peeping almost of this water hawk, karari bird, and then it's causing them to remember Krishna, because this is the nature of this kind of love. Everything that is seen reminds one of Krishna in separation. And then after they hear the karari bird, then the next verse is about the chakravaki bird, which there are I've never heard of a water hawk, a karari being in Vrindavan, but the chakravaki birds are in Vrindavan. I saw some just 2 days ago when we went on the Yamuna. They're geese. that have reddish necks, and they're always, there's always two of them together, the male and the female. Has anyone ever seen those? The Chakravarti? And you've seen them? Where? In Jaipur. In Udaipur. In Vrindavan, yes. They're very, very nice. They're big, they're powerful. And there's always two of them together, the male and the female.
I saw in them
with you. Like a dark looking, like a thin dark.
I can't remember if that's one of them, but I have a. I can send you one of them. I just took some photos of them a couple of days ago too. Well, I have the cry of it, which we're going to play in a second. Yeah, I had to squeeze him by the neck a little bit, but I couldn't find the red-throated geese, the Chakravarti's cry. But the next one we have, which one is another one, is very famous in Vrindavan, is the cuckoo. Of course, there are cuckoos all over the world, very soon, when the weather gets a little warmer, you hear cuckoos in Vrindavan all the time, and we'll play that sound so you recognize them. So after they hear the ocean. They're mostly involved in the hearing process here. They hear the ocean, and that reminds them of something about Krishna, and they're feeling separation. Then they see the moon. And then there's the breezes that they're feeling, the Malayan breezes that are cooling, and that reminds them of something, separation about Krishna. Then the cloud reminds them about Krishna. And then the cuckoo reminds them of Krishna. The mountain reminds them of Krishna. And the rivers remind them of Krishna. And then finally the swan reminds them of Krishna. So it was all ecstatic love. So here is the... If Krishna allows and technology doesn't fail us, we'll hear the peeping. Oops, that's not a peeping, that's the roaring of Prabhupada. Here's the karari. So that's what a karari, at least as closest to, as what they sound like nowadays. So just hearing this peeping as they're sleeping at night. Queens are hearing the peeping. And they say, "Oh, karari bird, you are lamenting. Now it is night, and somewhere in this world, the Supreme Lord is asleep in a hidden place. And he's right with them. He's right with them, but they're feeling complete separation from him. But you are wide awake, O friend, unable to fall asleep. Is it that like us, you have had your heart pierced to the core by the lotus-eyed Lord's munificent, playful, smiling glances? Because the karari is crying and peeping at night, not that means they're not sleeping. So the queens are also not sleeping because they're feeling so much separation from Krishna and ecstatic love. And in the kararis being awake and crying out, they're also feeling that this is our situation. You must be just like us. You have your heart stolen by Krishna and his playful smiling glance." Also, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Sanatana Goswami, the teachings to Sanatana Goswami, quote, he speaks this verse, so it was a favorite of his too, in Madhya 23:65. Here's the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that the transcendental madness, unmada, of the queens filled them with such ecstasy that they saw their own mood reflected in everyone and everything else. So this specifically is the consciousness of a Mahabhagavata. So this, what to speak of a Mahabhagavata, which basically means either bhava or prema. This is the queens who are exhibiting love on the stage of anuraga, very, very, very high. They cannot think of anything, anyone else except Krishna. They have their eyes open. It's not the kind of meditation where someone is sitting with their eyes closed in the Himalayas trying to focus their mind on the Supreme Lord. They're focusing their mind completely on Krishna with their eyes open. Their ears are open. And they're hearing everything. They're seeing everything. But they're only seeing Krishna in everything. It's their mood, their consciousness is reflected onto everything that they see. Atmavan manyate jagat. They're only, they like us, see their minds wherever they look. Here they point out to the karari bird, whom they take to be sorrowing over separation from Lord Krishna, that if the Lord actually had any concern for her or themselves, he would not be sleeping comfortably at that moment. They warn the karari not to expect Krishna to hear her lamentation and show some mercy. In case the karari might think that Krishna is sleeping with his queens, they deny this by saying that he is Gupta Bodha. His whereabouts are unknown to them. He is out in the world somewhere this night, but they have no idea where to go looking for him. And that's the mood of the queens, and that's the mood of a devotee. Where can I find Krishna? Where can I find Krishna? How can I find Krishna? And this mood of being separate from Krishna, a consciousness that one is separate from Krishna, yet intensely desiring to be with him, is the mood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught of separation. This can be done. This is the process, and the queens are describing it on an extremely high level, but even on our low level, we should try to turn to Krishna, we should try to see Krishna, we should see that we're far away, and we should long to be with Krishna. And if we don't have that type of longing, we will end up longing for the things of this world. Ah, dear bird, they cry, even though you are a simple creature, your heart has been deeply pierced, just like ours. You must have had some contact then with our Krishna. What keeps you from giving up your hopeless attachment to him? Next is the Chakravaki word. Poor Chakravaki. Even after closing your eyes, you continued to cry pitifully through the night for your unseen mate. Because again, the Chakravakis are always together. You always see two. I've never seen one of them. You always see two of them. So even after closing your eyes, you continued to cry pitifully through the night for your unseen mate. Or is it that like us, you have become the servant of Achyuta and hanker to wear in your braided hair the garland he has blessed with the touch of his feet? Dear ocean, you're always roaring. You're not sleeping at night because the ocean continues to, its waves continue to crash against the shore. So there is no sleeping at night for the ocean. Are you suffering insomnia? And they're in Dwarka hearing this, so they're always hearing the ocean. Or is it that, as with us, Mukunda has taken your insignias and you are hopeless of retrieving them? We'll read Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport to 17. Short purport. The queens say, O Chakravaki, are you unable to find your husband? O ocean, giving up your gravity. What is gravity? What is the definition we have of gravity from the nectar of the ocean? Seriousness, unable to fathom, understand the thoughts of another, what the person is thinking. That is what is called gravity. So very deep thoughts and deep emotion that become ununderstandable. So the ocean is very deep, and the ocean is peaceful. But they're saying, "Oh ocean, giving up your gravity, you are making loud sounds like a disturbed person. Not being able to sleep, you keep tossing and turning and crying with loud shrieks. Please tell us the reason." Well, even if you do not tell us the reason, we know it anyway. Why are you tossing and turning in the middle of the night, making loud noises as you cannot sleep? We know it anyway. Just as, on the pretext of enjoying conjugal love with us, that thief stole our kunkum-smeared pearl necklaces and flower garlands, similarly, he has stolen Lakshmi, the Kastuba jewel, and the other things which arose from you. Krishna stole from you, and you are crying for him, just as he has stolen everything from us. Krishna knows just how to steal. This is his expertise. "My dear moon, having contracted a severe case of tuberculosis, you have become so emaciated and thin." Why? What does that mean, the moon has become emaciated and thin? It's waning. Now it's thin. The first three were all sounds. Now this one is a sight. "Or is it that you appear dumbstruck? You're not making any sounds." The moon not making any sounds. "Because like us, you cannot remember the encouraging promises Mukunda once made to you." Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on 18. The queens say, "O moon, are you becoming thin and losing your power to remove darkness because of emaciation from tuberculosis? Is that the reason why you're waning? Because you have some disease?" "No, this cannot be the cause. But rather, we know the cause. You have forgotten those clever words and profuse promises that Mukunda made at the beginning of separation. Due to the extreme distraught condition you were in, you did not pay attention to them at that time. Now you cannot remember those words of Mukunda. Because of this great calamity, you were all choked up and appeared dumbstruck. Therefore, since you do not answer our questions and simply cry like the osprey and the chakravarti, you must be feeling the separation we feel from Krishna. Thus you are lamenting over having forgotten his words and just remain here silent and shattered." Next, 19, the breeze, "Oh Malayan breeze, what have we done to displease you that you stir up lust in our hearts which have already been shattered by Govinda's sidelong glance? Oh revered cloud, you are indeed very dear to the chief of the Yadavas who bears the mark of Srivats. Like us, you are bound to him by love and are meditating upon him." So the cloud, what's the verse in Jusvapate Brajapasun Saramagopai Sancharayantam Anuvanam Udirayantam Prema Pavridha? The cloud goes high into the sky. The gopis in separation are saying this, seeing the cloud, because Sakyo, because he's the friend. The cloud is considered the friend of Krishna for two reasons. Does anyone remember the two reasons? One? Second?
Same complexion.
That's the color.
He gives
compassion. Compassion. When someone is disturbed by the heat of the summer, the cloud helps them, giving them shade. And similarly, Krishna gives compassionate shade and shelter to those who are disturbed and who turn to him. "O revered cloud, you are indeed very dear to the chief of the Yadavas who bears the mark of Srivats." Srivats is compared to what? Lightning in the cloud. And Krishna carries the Srivats like the cloud carries lightning. "Like us, you are bound to him by love and are meditating upon him. Your heart is distraught with great eagerness, as our hearts are. And as you remember him again and again, and you shed a torrent of tears, association with Krishna brings such misery. But this is their ecstasy. Purport. The Acharyas explain this verse as follows. The cloud acts as the friend of Krishna by shielding him from the scorching rays of the sun. And certainly such an earnest well-wisher of the Lord must constantly meditate on him with concern for his welfare. Although the cloud shares the Lord's blue complexion, it is Lord Krishna's distinctive features, such as his Shivatmak, that especially attract him to this meditation. But what is the result? What is the result of meditating on Krishna? They say, it is simply unhappiness. The cloud is depressed and thus constantly sheds tears on the pretext, excuse of raining. So the queens advise him, it would be better for you to not take much interest in Krishna. So they're, of course, describing their own condition. 21. O sweet-throated cuckoo. Here is the sound of a sweet-throated cuckoo. Now this one is, I think this one's a little longer than the other one. But, and I think you can hear someone's trying to get the cuckoo to give it sound by himself imitating the sound of a cuckoo. But the real cuckoo is easy to discern. You can hear the crows too. Have you heard those in Vrindavan?
Yeah.
Yes? Yes? No, not this time of the year. Yes? You've heard them? No? Western ones are really cuckoo. These are just cuckoo birds. I've never heard a Western one. I've only heard cuckoo clocks. Go ahead.
These are far in the forest. Anyway, it was quite strange to hear that these are very sweet.
Yeah. Because these are the sound that you made sounds more like cuckoo. Yeah. But this is, they're not called cuckoos here, they're called koel. Sounds more like koel. Kokil or koel. I think in Bajavas they're koel. In Hindi also. Kokila in Sanskrit.
Yes,
Kokilvan.
Huh? We say Kokila.
Where?
In Hindi is Koyal.
Hindi is Koyal.
And then we say Queen.
Huh?
Queen.
Queen! Not cuckoo, cuckoo. Those are the Western ones. Okay. But anyway, don't think of that sweet.
Queen!
O sweet-throated cuckoos, in a voice that could revive the dead, you are vibrating the same sounds we once heard from our beloved, the most pleasing of all speakers. Please tell me what I can do today to please you. The purport here, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, through the song of a cuckoo, though a song of a cuckoo is very pleasant, Lord Krishna's wives perceive it as painful because it reminds them of their beloved Krishna and exacerbates, increases their pain of separation. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says something more intense directly. He says, the sweet song of the cuckoo is painful because it reminded the queens of their beloved Krishna and exacerbates their distress of separation. Thus the implied meaning is, O sweet-throated one, Valgitakanta, what may I do to please you who are making me burn and torment by your songs? I would like to set fire to your beaks. Because the sound, everything is reminding them of Krishna. And in separation, the remembrances of Krishna are pulling so much ecstatic love from the heart, but they can't be with him, and it drives them crazy. And because it's Krishna, and because they're in prema bhakti, their ecstasy of full meditation, absorption in Krishna is complete. And therefore, Krishna's, and of course the amazing thing about this prema bhakti is Krishna's right there, and they're feeling this separation from him and the intensity of their love for him. And now, next is the mountain. O magnanimous mountain, you neither move nor speak. You must be pondering some matter of great importance, or do you, like us, desire to hold on your breast the feet of Vasudeva's darling son, the mountain peaks? O rivers, wives of the ocean, your pools have now dried up. Alas, you have shriveled to nothing. And your wealth of lotuses have vanished. Especially in Dwarka. The river, what's the river there name? The Gomati. Raise your hand if you've been to Dwarka. Yeah. So, and this river is always, it exists and doesn't exist according to the tides. So it's dried up. You've shriveled to nothing and your wealth of lotuses has vanished. Are you then like us who are withering away because of not receiving the affectionate glance of our dear husband, the Lord of Madhu, who has teated our hearts? Is this why you've disappeared, practically speaking? And Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments on 23. The queens say, O rivers, wives of the ocean, your pools have all dried up, and we know the cause. By not obtaining the loving glance of your husband, the Lord of Madhu, who bestows all desired happiness even for you, the wives of the ocean, you have become just like us who have failed to attain Shyam's loving glance and whose hearts have thus been cheated. Thus like us, you have become lean and thin and are no longer beautiful by blooming lotus flowers. 24. Welcome, swan. The swan is always the messenger. Please sit here and drink some milk. Give us some news of the descendant of Sura, dear one. We know you're his messenger. Is that invincible Lord doing well? And does that unreliable friend of ours still remember the words he spoke to us long ago? Why should we go and worship him? O servant of a petty master, go tell him who fulfills our desires to come here without the goddess of fortune. Is she the only woman exclusively devoted to him? So this is the last of the prayers, and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has a comment here which is reproduced in the purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur relates the following conversation between the queens and the swan. The queens ask, is the unconquerable Lord doing well? The swan replies, how can Lord Krishna be doing well without you, his beloved consorts? But does he even remember what he once told one of us, Srimati Rukmini? Does he recall that he said in Bhagavatam 10:60-55. In all palaces, I see no other wife as dear as you. So that's what Krishna's told to all of them. He does indeed remember this. And that is why he sent me here. You should all go to him and engage in his devotional service. Why should we go worship him if he refuses to come here to be with us? Krishna's right next to them. But my dear oceans of compassion, the swan says to the queen, he is suffering so much from your absence. How can he be saved from this distress? Just listen. O servant of a petty master, tell him to come here, as he should. If he's suffering from lusty desires, he has only himself to blame, since he himself is the creator of Cupid's power. We self-respecting ladies are not going to yield to his demand that we seek him out. So be it, the swan says. I will take my leave. No, no, 1 minute, dear swan. Ask him to come to us here, but without the goddess of fortune, who always cheats us by keeping him all to herself. Don't you know that the goddess Lakshmi is devoted exclusively to the Lord? How could he give her up like that? Queens, and is she the only woman in the world who is completely sold out to him, to Krishna? What about us? So these are the songs of separation, Prema Vaichatya songs of separation in the presence of Krishna. How can we understand what to love Krishna is really like? But we can get a glimpse from this that even in presence of Krishna, there is the feeling of separation on this Prema Vaichatya Anuraga stage. Continuing, Sukadev Goswami said, by thus speaking and acting with such ecstatic love for Lord Krishna, the master of all masters of mystic yoga, his loving wives attain the ultimate goal of life. Purport. According to Acharya Srila Jiva Goswami, here Sukadeva Goswami uses the present tense of the word kriyamanena to indicate the Lord's queens attained his eternal abode immediately without delay. By this insight, the Acharya helps refute the false notion that after Lord Krishna's departure from this world, some primitive cowherds kidnapped his queens while they were under the protection of Arjuna, because this we hear we've heard it in the first canto, but also we hear it in the 11th canto when it describes the departure of Krishna from this world and how Dwarka is destroyed and the queen and Arjuna with Brajanab and others takes the queens to Mathura for shelter, and then they are kidnapped. In fact, as the self-realized Vaishnava commentators elsewhere explain, Lord Krishna himself appeared in the guise of thieves who abducted the queens. For further information on this subject, see Srila Prabhupada's purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 15th chapter, 20th verse. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti remarks that the supreme goal attained by these exalted women was not the liberation of the impersonal yogis but the perfect state of prema bhakti, pure loving devotion. Indeed, they were already imbued with divine love of God from the very beginning. So due to this feeling of separation, they are experiencing the presence of Krishna directly, always. They possessed transcendental, since they were already imbued with divine love of God from the very beginning, they possessed transcendental bodies of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, in which they were fully able to relish the pleasure of reciprocating with the Supreme Lord in his most intimate sweet pastimes. Specifically, in the opinion of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, their love of God matured into the ecstasy of madness in pure love, bhava-unmada, just as the gopis' love did when Krishna disappeared from their midst during the rasa dance. At that time, the gopis experienced the full development of ecstatic madness, which they expressed in their inquiries from the various creatures of the forest, and in such words as, Krishna aham pashyate gatim, I am Krishna, just see how gracefully I move, from the 30th chapter of the 10th canto. Similarly, the vilas, or the flourishing transformations of the ecstatic love of Lord Krishna's Dwarkadisha's principal, Lord Dwarkadisha's principal queens, has produced the prema vaichitya symptoms they have exhibited here. Complete madness in Krishna's presence, experiencing separation. Completely mad. 26. The Lord, who countless songs glorify in countless ways, forcibly attracts the minds of all women who simply hear about him. What to speak then of those women who see him directly? And how could one possibly describe the great austerities that have been performed by the women who perfectly served him, the spiritual master of the universe, in pure ecstatic love? Thinking of him as their husband, they rendered such intimate service as massaging his lotus feet. So therefore, speaking about the glories of these glorious devotees of Krishna. Vishwanath, short purport. One might ask, how can their austerities be described? Answer, they cannot be described because they were nitya siddhas, perfectly, eternally perfect devotees. And they did not have to perform any austerities, just like Nanda and Yashoda in chapter 8. Or one may ask, for those amongst them who are sadhana siddhas, they attained perfection by regulative practices. What type of austerities did they perform in their past lives to get that position? This verse answers by saying, thinking of Krishna as their husband, they served him by massaging his feet. 29. While fulfilling the highest standard of religious householder life, Lord Krishna maintained more than 16,108 wives, 100 wives. So this is described earlier in the 10th canto, how he acted as the perfect example of a religious householder. Now for the next verses, till there's a quick summary of Krishna's descendants and his principal queens. Amongst the jewel-like women were 8 principal queens headed by Rukmini. I've already described them one after another, O King, along with their sons. The Supreme Lord Krishna, whose endeavors never fail, begot 10 sons in each of his many wives. So he had the calculation given here. 161,080 wives, and also had a daughter by each wife. Amongst these sons, all possessing unlimited valor, 18 were Maharatas of great renown. Now hear their names from me. They were Prajumna, Aniruddha, Diptiman, Banu, Samba, Madhu, Brihadbanu, Chitrabanu, Vrika, Aruna, Pushkara, Vedabahu, Shrutadev, Sunandana, Chitrabahu, Virupa, Kavi, and Yarnagroda. This Aniruddha, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, is not the grandson of Krishna, but the son of Krishna. O best of kings, of these sons begotten by Lord Krishna, the enemy of Madhu, the most prominent was Rukmini's son, Prajumna. He was just like his father. The great warrior Prajumna married Rukmi's daughter, Rukmavati, who gave birth to Aniruddha. He was as strong as 10,000 elephants. Rukmi's daughter's son, Aniruddha, married Rukmi's son's daughter named Rochana. From him was born Vadra, who would remain among the few survivors of the Yadus' battle with clubs. From Vajra came Pratibahu, whose son was Subahu. Subahu's son was Satasena, from whom Satasena was born. No one born in this family was poor in wealth or progeny, short-lived, weak, or neglectful of Brahminical culture. The Yadu dynasty produced innumerable great men of famous deeds. Even in tens of thousands of years, O King, one could never count them all. I have heard from authoritative sources, listen to this, that the Yadu family employed 38,800,000 teachers just to educate their children. Who can count all the great Yadavas? When amongst them, King Ugrasena alone was accompanied by an entourage of 30 trillion attendants. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains why specifically 30 trillion rather than an indefinite number of tens of trillion is stated here to be the number of King Ugrasena's attendants. So then the question, just imagine, they all had to live somewhere, they had to be fed, so how many cooks does it take to feed 30 trillion attendants? So these numbers are beyond our ability to estimate and conceive of. So why did he say 30 trillion as opposed to so many? Because it's ayuta lakshena. He does so by citing, so this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation, he does so by citing the interpretational rule of kapin jala adhikarena, the logic of referring to pigeons. Somewhere in the Vedas is found the injunction that one should sacrifice some pigeons. This plural number should be taken to mean not an indiscriminate number of pigeons, but precisely three of them, since the Vedas never leave any matter vague. The rules of Mamamsaka interpretation take three as the default number when no specific number is given. The savage descendants of Diti, the demons, who had been killed, the Daityas, in past ages in battles between the demigods and demons, took birth amongst the human beings and arrogantly harassed the general population. So this was what was going on. The demons had taken birth, and therefore Bhumi, understanding that the earth was overburdened by the fourth power of all the demons, she went to Brahma, and they went to the Swetadeep, right in the first chapter, and they prayed for the appearance of Krishna. Of course, the demons, they had a conspiracy going. They were taking over the earth. So she was calling for the incarnation of the Lord to come. To subdue these demons, Lord Hari told the demigods to descend into the dynasty of Yadu. They comprised 101 clans, O king. Because Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Yadavas accepted him as their ultimate authority. And amongst them, all those who were his intimate associates, all those who were his intimate associates especially flourished. We'll just read 45 and 46 and then we'll stop and then have our break and then complete the chapter after. We'll just read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment to 45, short comment. Those who were Krishna's intimate associates, all in the form of Yadavas, increased the number of Yadus. Krishna alone could count their number because such counting was beyond the comprehension of even persons like Lord Brahma. So this is Krishna's opulence and Krishna's glory. So the first glory that's mentioned is his dealings with the queens, which is a very intimate glory. And here is just numerical strength. And then the final verse we'll read right now, and we'll end at 46, and then to continue with the final verses, and there's only 50 verses in this chapter. So, Saya Sanatana Lapa Krida Snana Dikamasu Navidu Satam Matmanam Vishnaya Krishna Chaitasaha. The Vrishnis was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, in Krishna Chaitasa, that they forgot their own bodies while sleeping, sitting, walking, conversing, playing, bathing, and so on. So we've heard about the queen's ecstasy, but all these Vrishnis, all these Yadus, they were similarly Krishna Chaitasa, Vrishnaya, all the Vrishnis were Krishna Chaitasa. The consciousness was fully absorbed in Krishna. So much so, and has this ever happened to you? You're walking somewhere and you forget, and you're so absorbed in your thoughts that you can't, then suddenly, oh yes, here I am. I've arrived. Has that ever happened to you? Yes?
I had a friend who was driving on the freeway and he forgot, you know, he was driving. So he missed three exits and after that he remembered that he
had to get. Acha. And there's a famous Christian writer. I can't remember his first name. It's two initials. His name is Chesterton. That he used to... Huh?
K. Chesterton.
Yes. So he was very famous for because he'd be always lost in thoughts. He'd be very forgetful. So he would call up his wife and say, "Where am I supposed to be?" He'd just get lost. He'd say, "Is it time for me to come back yet?" He'd just get lost in his thoughts. So the Vrishnis were all like that, but it was always so absorbed in thinking about Krishna. They were just that no other thought could enter their mind. They were continuously and always enamored, captured, enchanted by the wonderful, sweet pastimes and activities and words and beauty of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So although we can glimpse these pastimes by hearing about them, but we should understand that this is what Krishna consciousness means, being so absorbed in Krishna continuously. Okay, let's stop here and then we'll read 47 and 48 and 49 and 50 at 12:30. We'll start exactly at 12:30.